Like, you know, when you were a recluse, like, what was that like? Did you just not talk?
It bit the biggest risk they could, and it didn't pay off for them. Because, like, if put your hand in the cookie jar, you're either going to get caught or you're going to get a cookie.
That is true. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Camden Podcasting Club with your host, Carter Freud, and today I have one of the greatest guests I've ever had, Donald Anderson. This man is going to blow your mind with his ingenuity, his intelligence, and just his completely different perspective on things. When I started making season 2, right, I wanted this man on the show from the beginning, and there was a ton of other great people I had on there, and this was the man I definitely absolutely wanted to have. So Donald, why don't you unmute your mic so we can get straight into it?
Hello
Donald. So Donald, how would you describe yourself as like a person?
I'm pretty laid back person, I guess you could say. I like to take it by the moment. Don't really like to think too far ahead into the future. As you could say.
So you're not really like a long-term planner. You don't really have your life charted out.
No, definitely not. Huh. Might be a little problematic in the future, but we'll see.
Does that ever like bother you as like a high school senior with like, you know, your parents probably like nagging you every second, like what are you going to major for and all that?
Oh yeah, I have no clue, but I mean, it'll work itself out, I'm sure. And a lot of people say that they didn't know what they were going to do when they were at that age. So, I mean, I'm looking. I just don't know yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure Bill Gates didn't know what he wanted to do. And, you know, Jeff Bezos, richest man in the world. I mean, he was born a son of a single mother. So, I mean, you can really do anything with anything is what I'm trying to say. Trying to get at.
American dream, baby.
American dream, baby. So what drives you? Like, what's your passion?
I'm not really sure. I mean, I do things on the side and kind of my love for the things that I do that drives me to pursue them.
What do you do on the side?
I play drums. I've been learning drums for about a year and a half now. That's fun. I'm in the school play. That's the first time for that. And I've just kind of been branching out from what I used to not do.
Well, what made you decide to, you know, jump into all these new areas, music and theater?
Just because I didn't do anything in my free time. I was kind of wasting my life. And so I decided, you know what? It's senior year. Well, drumming wasn't senior year, but I said to myself, it's senior year, so I got to get involved in these things. Because everyone says at Camden, as long as you're involved in the after-school activities, it makes the experience there much better. And I kind of shied away from that. So I decided, why not go out with a bang? And we'll get involved with all the activities.
Do you think it's true? Do you think it has, at least so far, made your experience a little bit more fun?
So far, sorry. So far, yeah. I've been... sorry about that. I've been enjoying it much more than I have in the past. Sorry, I was choking on water.
It's all good, man. You know, water that tries to murder you at some points.
It's gonna get cut, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'll keep that in for a dramatic effect. Just choking on water.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Sorry.
Dude's ASMR coughs, man.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. Yeah, but you were just saying, like, so joining all these clubs and stuff made life a lot more fun, but, like, why do you think you weren't involved before that in, like, your junior, sophomore years? What did you do then? Why do you think you weren't involved?
I just didn't have any real desire to do any of it. I'm not really sure what changed in me, but I just didn't want to. I don't know why. I kind of, when I moved here in 7th grade, became a much more reclusive person than I was before. And I kind of just shied away from doing a lot of things.
Was it hard moving?
Well, we moved over the summer, so, and the benefit of moving into a middle school was half the people didn't know the other half of the people.
Right.
So it was easy to new friends, and people were like, oh, wait, you're not from the other school in our district? Like, no, I'm from a completely different district.
And how were you different back in the old district versus middle school?
I was a much more outgoing person. I was definitely a bit more of a weirdo back then, too. So yeah. I'm gonna drop that.
I mean, do you think you were better when you were a weirdo, or do you like yourself better now, or?
I like myself better now. So I think now that I've started to get back into the swing of things a little more, I'm a bit more mixed between being weird and less weird, I guess you could say.
I mean, that's good. I mean, what was the weird part about you? Like, what made you stand out? Like, what was unique?
I was just into, like, really nerdy stuff.
Okay, what kind of nerdy stuff? That's what I'm talking about.
Like, you know, Pokemon cards, Nintendo stuff. I mean, I still like the stuff. Not really Pokemon, but Nintendo's still fun.
Yeah.
But it's just not to the extent that I was obsessed with it before.
Right. And I'm curious, what do you think about high school as a whole? Like, just about an institution?
It's definitely better, I think, than previous years, because you get more freedom. I do enjoy that more than I did the constraints of middle school and elementary school. And you're treated more like an adult than you were before. I do like that.
Hmm. Is there anything you dislike about it?
Homework. Not a big fan of that.
Yeah.
No, I enjoy it for the most part. Waking up early sucks.
It does. Honestly, like, I feel like I'm gonna get, like, a aneurysm from all this lack of sleep. We have a break right now, which is good, but, like, these past few days, like, 4 hours is the regular, man.
And oh, yeah. It's rough.
It's honestly nightmarish. And so, moving on to a different topic, let's talk about history, because I feel like you are, like, the foremost history expert at Camden.
I do like history.
Okay, so what's your opinion on like America as like a nation?
I mean, it's my nation, and I'm a pretty big fan of it. I think it's the best out there. Where else I'd really want to be? And like historically, we've saved the world a couple times.
What are some times you think we've saved the world that like it just wouldn't be the same without America there?
Well, the thing is, the U.S. has kind of led the way in democratizing the world, if you will. U.S. and Britain were kind of the leaders in that. So it's brought about freedom for a lot of other people, as opposed to just ourselves. And that's just through our interactions on the world stage, really. Like, if you look at the World Wars, it's a great example of how we got involved. Maybe a little last minute, but we still showed up.
Let's talk World War One. What do you think about that?
World War One is actually very interesting, but the U.S. didn't really show up till a lot later in the war. We didn't get much done in that one, and I think that if the nations weren't so vengeful at the end, chances are we probably wouldn't have had a lot of the problems that have led up afterwards.
Yeah, they just, like, crucified, like, poor Germany at the end there with that Treaty of Versailles.
Oh, yeah, no, it was bad.
Why do you think
didn't get any slack?
Why do you think they did that? Why do you think they were just so brutal to him?
Well, if you look at it from their perspective, 4 years earlier, they had a lot more people in their nation, and then now they're all dead at the end of the war, so millions of people had died, and it was the deadliest war probably European history at that point. Well, definitely in European history at that point. Maybe not world history. There were a couple Chinese wars that were a little deadlier.
Yeah.
So they really felt the I don't know how to put this, the destruction from the war, and they had anger from that, and they wanted to take it out on someone, and Germany was the biggest enemy, so they kind of directed their anger there.
Yeah, and that's a really funny way to describe it. Like, they just had a lot more people at the beginning of the war, and like
than they did at the end.
Yeah, than they did at the end. That's why they just annihilated them. I mean, I feel like America is so overpowered as a country that one of the most deadliest conflicts for America was actually when it was fighting itself during the Civil War.
It's true.
What do you think about that? What do you think about that whole conflict?
Definitely not a fan of the South. Glad we beat them. I'm happy that the Union was preserved and all. Abraham Lincoln's pretty cool. He's one of my top 10 presidents. That's, I believe he is most people's.
What are your other favorite presidents?
Washington is another one that I like, just because of what he did for the presidency as a whole. He kind of set the scene for everything and sort of set precedents for what other presidents would do, which some of that has actually become law now.
Right.
And then I like Teddy Roosevelt too.
Oh man, Teddy Roosevelt was the best, man. This guy was awesome.
Yeah.
Like rough riding. Right, yeah, dude, yeah. Absolutely. Did you hear about like how when he was young, right? He was completely asthma ridden. He was like he could barely walk, he could barely exercise. And then his dad was just like, "Dude, you got to be a badass, man. You got to exercise." And then Teddy was like, "Okay." And then he did that. He just became amazing. Yeah, basically. And like he becomes like this rough riding, wrestling, Harvard educated, amazing dude. He just crushes like monopolies. And
that dude is a beast.
Absolutely, yeah.
Big fan of him because he helps the environment and he kind of stops unregulated capitalism from destroying our economy.
What's your opinion on capitalism? Because I feel like that's in the news a lot.
I like it as long as the regulations that are necessary are there. I think too much can hurt it. I think it's good if you have just the right amount.
What are some good and bad regulations in your mind?
Good regulations are things that help the environment, keeps companies from dumping chemicals in water, things like that. Bad regulations are stuff that's maybe not really necessary, but can actually hurt companies in the long run. I can't really think of an example off the top of my head about that. I mean, it's really a case-by-case basis. You look at it and you determine, is this good or not? And then you see how it affects the economy as a whole.
Do you think that we're in a time period where there's too much or too little regulation?
Well, there's a lot more than there was in the start.
Right.
I mean, really, after FDR, the regulations kind of went through the roof because of his New Deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems to be working, so I guess it's pretty good. I mean, obviously you can dial things back and small things, but on the grand scheme, I think we're in a good spot.
Do you think FDR was a good president?
I'm not a big FDR guy, to be honest with you. Just because of some of the things he did, I can't really stand by, like threatening to pack the Supreme Court with guys that he liked.
Yeah.
It's kind of an attack on the Constitution, in my opinion. And I think we should try to uphold that, as that is kind of what our government is founded on.
Right. But do you ever feel that like maybe the Constitution doesn't change fast enough to adapt with the times? Or do you think that we as a country need to adapt to stick to the Constitution?
Sorry, you cut out.
Oh, I was going to say that. Do you think that sometimes the Constitution doesn't adapt fast enough to fit with the times? Or do you feel like the country needs to adapt more to fit with the Constitution?
Well, that's why the laws are there. We can make laws. And if you really want to adapt the Constitution, there are ways to do it. And they're set to be difficult because it needs to be a will of the people to change it. And it has to be a sort of really widespread will to change the Constitution. So it can't just be a small group that wants to change something and fundamentally alter our government. It's like the masses want to change the Constitution, and then it gets done.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm curious more as to what were some of your other favorite presidents and why?
Other favorite presidents? I think Reagan's pretty funny. I like his charisma.
Yeah.
If anything. Kennedy was okay. He stopped the world from exploding, so that was good.
But he did get shot in the face, I mean.
Well, save himself, but he's not.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not his fault, really. Can't really stop a bullet.
I mean, depending on what conspiracy theories you read, it could be as well. I mean,
I've seen things that back up the one shooter. And they did like forensic stuff. They proved that it absolutely could have been one shooter from the place that he was.
But didn't it like follow like a really weird path though, like the whole magic bullet thing?
It did, but it was based on how the bullet was shaped. Huh. It was a particular like Italian gun that the bullets were kind of rounded at the top.
Right.
Opposed to pointed like most are. And so it caused it to spin weird. And it went through Kennedy and into the guy behind him or in front of him.
And that changed the trajectory to just cause that completely insane series of events, huh?
I mean, because it's going so fast that slight changes to it would throw it off. So the magic bullet theory actually holds up, I guess. Is that theory, the magic bullet one?
Would you call yourself, like, a gun buff? Like, do you, like, follow guns and, like, do a lot of research on them?
I mean, I enjoy shooting.
Right.
So, I'm not crazy, insanely, I know everything, I know what every caliber of bullet is, but I mean, I know, handle a firearm, need to.
What is it, like, how do you feel about gun control and, like, the movement to, like, you know, just ban guns?
I mean, I don't like that, because I do it in fire. I think if you're responsible with your firearms, then it shouldn't be a problem. And there are definitely, this is another kind of case-by-case basis thing. It's like, should they have this, yes or no? But I mean, a lot of the arguments say, but like with the Constitution, it's like, well, it says shall not be infringed, so any form of gun control is bad. But on the other hand, do you really want citizens walking around with nuclear bombs? I mean, that's pretty extreme, but it's not something. So, I mean, in moderation, I guess it's okay.
But, like, what's your opinion as to, like, background checks and, like, and that? Do you think that we should even bother with that, or do you feel like it's something we should go for?
Background checks are good. And a lot of times, actually, if you're licensed by the state, you have to have a background check, usually. There are a couple, it goes state by state. So it's different in different states, but in most states, you actually do have to get a background check. And the only time you don't is if it's a private sale. So if it's like, and it's only in the state, it can be a private sale. So if you're going from one state to another, you actually do have to get it through a licensed gun vendor, and they have to do a background check. So if it's just like, say I were selling you a firearm that I didn't want anymore, then you don't have to have a background check, which could be problematic. But the question is, how do you regulate that then? Because it's a kind of, not really black market, but sort of behind the curtain thing that happens. I don't think there's really an answer for that.
Right, and one thing that I find interesting is that a lot of people say that America has, like, the most gun deaths, it's got the most, like, mass shootings. And while it's true, it's got one of the most highest amounts of mass shootings. If you look at per capita, though, and realize that America is, like, an absolutely massive country with a ton of people. It's not that high on the list of gun deaths. So when you consider, and you got to consider the protective factors of guns as well. So I think it's pretty
new. That's true. I saw some statistic. I think it was from the FBI. I don't have it in front of me, but I think it said something along the lines of for every however many gun deaths, it was like triple the amount of times that guns save lives without even, and that's not even inspiring, I think. I think it's just even just brandishing a gun can deter someone.
Right.
You don't have to kill them every time. So even if those statistics aren't calculated, it could increase the amount of times the guns actually save lives.
Yeah.
As long as they're in the hands of responsible people.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Like, you never see in statistics, like, number of people saved by guns. It's like, so it's...
I mean, if you're trying to push something... like gun control, that wouldn't really help you do that. So I can see why they don't show that often. But I mean, then the other people who are trying to go against gun control usually do bring up the statistics. So it just kind of depends where you're looking.
Right. And another thing I'm curious about is, tell me about America's role in World War II. Total topics, which I know, but what do you think about it? I want to pick your brain.
I mean, I think a lot of people will say, oh, they didn't, the world didn't need America to win the war. It just sped it up. I disagree. I think we were probably the most influential player in the war. Because the Soviets, everybody quotes the Soviets and, oh, look at how many people died. Yes, the Eastern Front was very bloody. But we were the world's suppliers, in a way, with the arsenal of democracy. Without us, I think the Russians probably would have fallen, because we did with the Lend-Lease kind of saved them, in a way. And then, not to mention, we kind of single-handedly took on Japan.
Right.
And they were a lot weaker than Germany was. So I think we were very influential in the war. And we might not have had the most deaths, but that's also because we had different strategies for fighting than the Russians did. Like, the American doctrine was, when you can throw steel instead of people at the enemy, do that. So we'd shoot them with artillery stuff before we would send our people in.
Right. And one thing I'm curious about is, do you even think that Germany could have won the war? Because I hear a lot of theories that, like, that Germany didn't have enough oil to win the war, especially when they failed to invade Russia. They couldn't get the oil stores there. So do you think that America was essential in that aspect, or like, what do you think?
So Germany winning the war, it was solidified, I think, when America joined. They were absolutely going to lose. There's no chance. But at the start, so when Hitler broke the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact and invaded the Soviet Union with Operation Barbarossa, Stalin was caught completely unawares. So if Hitler had just focused on Britain, and so the Luftwaffe in Britain started bombing cities instead of the airfields, and they were mere months away from destroying the RAF and capitulating Britain, and Britain would have lost. So if they had never invaded the Soviet Union in the first place, or at least waited until Britain was out of the war, I think Germany could have won. But I just don't think they played their cards right, so they lost. But I think that's probably the only way they could have won the war, would have been early on.
Right. And one thing I'm also curious is, like, in terms of Japan, I know, like, Japan was really desperate for oil, and that was one of the main reasons they attacked the United States. Do you think that Japan ever had a chance of winning their war, or even taking control of some parts of America?
No, I don't think so, for two reasons. One, they would never invade the United States. There's a quote from one of their admirals who said, "You can never invade the United States because behind every blade of grass is a rifle, because the American citizens are armed." Another reason why the Second Amendment is beneficial, I think. But the other reason was that the reason Japan had such success early on in the war is because they were kind of surprise attack. They used speed to their advantage, but America was a much powerful country at the time. And that's why you see the United States slowly start to push Japan back to their island. So I don't think they could have ever beaten the United States in a war, unless they had surprise invaded the U.S. and they didn't have any military. So I don't think even that would have worked, because of citizens having weapons.
What do you think that their move should have been when they were just in that terrible situation where they were invading China, right? And then they had run out of oil and America was freezing their oil reserves. Like, what should they have done? Should they just given up?
I mean, if not give up, dig in and then wait for it to blow over. They were kind of put in an impossible situation. And they took the biggest risk they could, and it didn't pay off for them. Because, like, if they had knocked America out, America's fleet out, and then America said, fine, we don't want war, and they removed the embargo because they didn't have a fleet, then they would have probably been able to continue their conquest of China. But it was such a big risk that I don't think they could have ever really pulled it off.
Right. And what do you think about, I know I'm doing a lot of what if situations, but what do you think about Italy too? Like, do you think, why do you think Italy was just so trash in World War II? That's my first question.
I don't think the people were really, their spirits were in it. You notice as soon as the Americans take Rome, I think, the Italian people turned on Mussolini. And they killed him. They publicly executed him. They hung him upside down in a square. And so the only reason that we continued to fight in Italy was because the Germans actually sent troops down to garrison these defensive lines they built. And the Germans took over the situation in Italy. So I don't think that people were really... they really wanted to go be fighting the war. And also, the way Italy is, they're not... they don't really have a very strong sense of unity between the different parts of them. People in the south and the people in the north are very different people.
Really?
Is that too? Yeah, the people in northern Germany are much more German-esque. And the southern Italians are more of the traditional Italians you see in... oh, the New Yorker Italian. They're the darker-skinned, olive dudes.
Right.
So they're different that way. And just the way Italy was throughout history, being broken up between different city-states, they never really had a major unifying thing until they were unified in the 1800s. Even that was very convoluted.
Do you even... how did that even happen, their unification? Do you remember?
I really don't, because it was so insane. It's like three different guys tried to do it, and then one guy managed to finally get them all unified, and it was like 10 years after Germany or 10 years before Germany. It was right around the same time that Germany unified, but it was a mess.
I feel like Germany's unification story is one of the coolest ones in all of history. Like, you got like this little place called like Prussia, right, which has got basically no natural resources, and then that slowly becomes more and more militarily powerful until eventually they get they control wider and wider amounts of territory. And then Otto von Bismarck comes along, and he just like completely connects all of the territories together, doing the impossible without starting a Napoleon-like conflict, which I think is amazing.
Well, it was interesting because he played his allies against each other and against him, I guess you could say. So like, for example, Austria was his big contender for unifying Germany, because some of the southern German states were Catholic, like the Austrians, and Prussia was Protestant, so there was that big divide between them. And so in order to, like, there was territory in Denmark that they wanted. They allied with the Austrians to fight Denmark. And then they turned on the Austrians, fought them to take some states. And then in order to get those southern states who were Catholic into the fold, they went to war with France so that they could incorporate them in. So he really kind of played to everyone's what they wanted at the time. And ultimately did what was best for Germany.
Yeah. And he did a really, really good job of it too. Like, oh my god, this man.
Dude was a bit of a genius, I guess you could say.
And have you like read about like his childhood? Like the man was like absolutely insane, like in his childhood, like you would not expect it at all.
I don't know much about his childhood.
Well, like
he's a noble, right?
He was a noble, yeah, he was a noble. And like he, yeah,
that's all I really know about him.
Yeah, he organized like so many revolts against like his like the kingdom that he was in, and he like he got in trouble for it, but they didn't murder him, and it was so weird how he just ended up being like this really like strategical guy who ends up unifying all of Germany.
I got lucky and get killed.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think about Napoleon, man?
Napoleon, he was a bit of a madman. Be honest.
A madman.
Yeah, he was kind of crazy because he thought he could control everyone, and then he did his little policy against the British where he tried to embargo them, and it ended up hurting the rest of Europe instead. And then a lot of people point to Napoleonic era for, like, look, the French weren't actually terrible at fighting. Little do you know, his best units were all from other countries.
Really?
Surprisingly enough, yeah. And he did a lot of foolish things, like invading Spain and deposing them when they were kind of his ally, and starting the really long Peninsular War, because that just was a thorn in his side the whole time, and obviously invading Russia was kind of silly. A lot of people say, oh, don't invade Russia in the winter. Yeah, I mean, he didn't invade Russia in the winter. I'm pretty sure he invaded it in the spring.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he timed it right, yeah.
Eventually winter comes, and Russia's such a big country that you'll probably still be there by the time it hits. Not to mention the Russians didn't mind burning their own cities to the ground to stop him from taking them. But I just don't think he was prepared for that type of combat that stretches supply lines so thin. And I think he was a bit of an egomaniac, too, because he never really lost any battles until Russia. So, I think I read somewhere that he would have really bad fits of rage whenever something didn't go his way. So, there's that.
Yeah, I think that's right, and he was absolutely an egomaniac, but I mean, like, don't you sometimes get, like, the feeling that, you know, like, maybe, like, he deserved to be a little bit egoistic, because, I mean, like, this guy turns a republic into an empire, and he basically conquers pretty much all of Europe, even though he stopped, and, like, he gets kicked out, and then he does it again. So, I mean, like...
He was a military genius, and then the only reason he really lost towards the end, Napoleon was one to take big risks, but then by the time he gets to Waterloo, he'd kind of toned down, so he wasn't really taking a lot of risks, and he started making a lot of mistakes that his enemies would make, and be a lot more cautious, and that's kind of theorized why he didn't win Waterloo, because he had a much stronger force, and he was kind of racing against the clock there.
Do you think that life is maybe about taking risks and, like, pushing yourself?
Yeah, because with risk comes reward a lot of the time, unless things don't go well. So it's like, put your hand in the cookie jar. You're either going to get caught or you're going to get a cookie.
That is true. Yeah, that's a really good metaphor for it. I mean, you look at all these famous people, right, and they're with so much success, and, like, you look at their stories of just, like, complete and utter luck, and it's like, there are so many other people where they could have gone through that and just not, just ended up in the slums on the street. Like, I think
definitely a mix of talent, luck, and smarts.
Yeah.
At least smarts in what they're doing. Because they make it big, so they know how to sell their brand. Because they are their own business, essentially.
Right.
They're selling themselves as their business, so as long as they're not being stupid about it. You see people who do make stupid decisions get destroyed.
Do you see yourself, like, running your own business, like, putting yourself out there like that, or not really?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. Future is unclear at the moment. But, I mean, if I had a good idea, or an idea that I thought was good and would sell, then yeah, I'd definitely do it. I'd take the risk.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like a lot of times people, like, complain about all these people, like, with just getting to where they are based on luck. But a lot of people don't even take the risks necessary to get there. You get what I'm saying? That's
true. They took risks to get to the position that would allow their talent to begin. And some of them don't have talent, and they got luck. One or the other.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I'm curious, is there any, like, issues that, like, you're really passionate about that you think needs more attention?
I'm a big proponent of free speech. I don't like censorship, really. I like the flow of ideas. I think that's really important in our society. So things like Google censorship, those issues that have been brought up, I think are actually big problems. Because there was actually a whistleblower for Google. He said that Google was trying to influence the elections towards their side. I have no idea if that's true or not. I only saw the one video on it. I haven't really seen much evidence backing it. But if it is true, then I'd have a pretty big problem with that, because I don't think that's good in a free society like ours.
Do you think that that's something that's been coming more and more under attack, free speech?
I think it's always kind of come under attack. The thing is, the price of freedom is relentlessly having your guard up, I guess you could say. It's kind of a bad way to phrase it, but...
No, I understand what you mean.
As soon as you drop your guard and it gets taken away, it's really hard to get back. So you have to kind of constantly defend it. And I think there's always going to be attacks on it. There always has been. In the past.
What do you think about, like, hate speech in general? A lot of people say that, like, you know, some sorts of speech, like, it shouldn't be allowed because they don't really add anything productive and they're just hurting other people. But then on the other hand, it is free speech. I mean, I don't know.
So, if you look at it, there's two kind of ways that speech is regulated, the way I see it. There's government regulation of speech, and then there's societal regulation. So I think government shouldn't regulate speech at all. So that's why the free speech is there. They should regulate things like yelling fire in a crowded theater, things that could actually get other people injured, like threats. That should be what government comes in and deals with that. But if you're talking about things like hate speech, that's more of a societal thing. So, yeah, they might be saying something bad, but chances are most of society doesn't agree with them, and it kind of makes them an outcast, in a way. And that should kind of be the natural deterrent. And if people don't care, it's kind of a weird black and... No, it's not really a black and white issue, I guess.
Right, but like, say like, you see this a lot with like comedians, like they'll say something in their past and then they'll bring it up and then they'll get fired from their job. Like, me personally, I just feel like it doesn't change the person as a comedian. Like, why are you ending this man's career? But like, I don't...
Well, that's the thing. Everyone makes mistakes. It's just about moving on. Besides, they said it a long time ago. Chances are they've changed since then.
Right.
I mean, if they're still in the public eye, then I'm sure they have. Because you change with the times if you want to stay relevant.
Right.
And then comedy's different. Because with comedy, you're trying to make a joke. And a lot of humor is derived from dark places, I guess you could say. Because it's kind of the way... It's kind of making fun of life.
At what point do you think it's... life? Yeah, at what point do you think it goes too far? Do you even think that there is line? Do you feel like there should be no line to comedy?
I mean... good question. Something to think about. As long as it's not hurting anyone, or it doesn't, like, attack anyone or defame them, I guess you could say... then I think it's okay. And as long as people are okay with it, that's fine. Because that's a hard question.
It is. That's the type of questions we like to ask.
Yeah. Camden Podcast, really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it really depends on what the joke is. And kind of who's saying it, too.
Does it really matter who's saying it, though?
I mean, not really, in my opinion, but to some people it might.
Yeah, like, a lot of times you'll see, like, I guess, a black person making a black joke, and, like, they'll say, like, well, because he's a black person, it's okay, but, like, if you think about it, is it really fair that, like, a person can make a joke just because of the color of their skin? Like, shouldn't anybody be allowed to make any kind of joke, if you think about it? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think... anyone should be able to make any joke they'd like. But that's kind of what I was talking about with the society aspect of the two forms of regulating speech. Because that's when the society comes in and says, it's not really okay for you to say that. And that's why don't. And then businesses want to make money because that's their goal.
It's true.
If society disagrees with it, then cut away the hand to save the rest of the body.
Yeah, I guess so. And,
I mean, I don't think it's really something you can fix. Because it's just the way it is now.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it does kind of suck sometimes. Like, did you hear about Dave Chappelle's special Sticks and Stones?
Yeah. I watched it.
Oh, man, that was good. It was good.
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
Yeah, and like it got like 0% on Rotten Tomatoes, man.
Except for the audience score.
Oh, the audience score, they loved it.
But yeah. But see, the thing is, when I know it's a comedy bit, I don't think it's offensive because I know it's not meant to go out and attack people. Like, it might be an attack on people, but it's just making fun of them. It's all in good fun.
Right.
So if, like, you know it's comedy, then don't get worked up about it. That's my 2 cents.
I think that's a very wise 2 cents.
Thanks.
One thing I'm wondering is, you just joined Play in Theater, right? We were talking about that way, way, way earlier. And I'm curious, what's that experience like? What are the people there like? What's the whole thing like practicing for the big performance? Tell me about it.
The people are nice. I like most of the people. I wasn't really sure, right? Because I didn't know a lot of them, just because they're in different grades and stuff. But I mean, they're all nice to me when I joined. So I mean, I like them. Kind of treat others how you would like treated, kind of deal.
Right.
So they treated me nicely, so hey, kudos to them. It's definitely interesting learning lines. I've never really had to do that before, and it's got its difficulties, especially remembering them when you're practicing. And I can't imagine how it's going to be in front of an audience trying to remember lines. I'm sure, it won't be as much fun as it is now. We'll see.
What do you think is the best part about it?
Probably the people. They're a lot of fun. People in the show. And the show that Camden's doing this year is a lot smaller than previous years. So it makes the cast a little closer.
Right.
And definitely the set building's a lot of fun too.
Ooh. See, set building's always great. I've been in a play before and like just building the set, getting some pizza, man. That's the life. That's the
it's
life.
A lot of fun.
So do you think you've learned, like, I know you've only been doing it for like a short amount of time, but do you think you've learned anything from being in a play or maybe your other extracurricular experiences? Like, have you learned anything?
I mean, it's definitely helping me become a better person. Because, I mean, if you're like I was before, kind of bottling yourself up, you become socially outcast, but kind of socially in your own little corner, and it does help you branch out and get to know people and have better people skills. So that's good.
Yeah. And do you think you've changed from interacting more, from putting yourself out more, and how so?
I mean, just becoming a bit more of or a bit less of a reclusive person, definitely that, which is good because I was pretty reclusive person when I first moved here. And it's just kind of getting out more and meeting new people. I'm enjoying it so far, so might have to make a habit of it.
Might have to make a habit of it. That's awesome. And yeah, I'm guessing I'm just wondering, like, you know, when you were a recluse, like, what was that like? Did you just not talk to people, or what was it? What'd you do?
Just shy, really. Because the way I thought about it was, oh, what? This person doesn't want to talk to me. I don't want to burden them with me talking to them. And that's kind of become a bit more of a, maybe that's not true. I guess.
Yeah. And who knows, maybe you'll eventually get to the point where you're just like, I don't care at all what this person thinks, and I'm going to force myself onto them vocally, whether or not they care.
That's the dream.
That's the dream. All right. So, final question, to wrap it all up. If there's anything you can take away, anything that people should take away from this episode about your life, what do you think they should take away?
Definitely try and come out of your shell if you're in one. Try to branch out, because a lot of good things will happen if you do, and you'll become a much better person because of it. You'll grow as a person, and you'll get skills that you didn't have before. It helps just in life in general.
Right. And thank you so much, Donald, for coming on the podcast. This was an amazing episode.
I enjoyed it.
All right, see you guys all in the next episode. Just a reminder that everything said on this podcast may or may not even be true. It could all be fake. It could all be satire. But what's important is that everything on here is more real than anything you'll see on TV or Netflix. I want to thank you guys so much for listening once again, and be sure to submit your own stories anonymously to CamdenPodcastingClub@gmail.com, where I will read them in bonus episodes. In addition, if you know anyone who would love to be on the podcast who has their own high school stories, again, email at the Camden Podcasting Club email. Have a nice one, and see you on the next episode.